Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servididio, and I am your host. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Tonight, I have a very special guest. I have Chris Berardo. He's Silvermine, Connecticut's. Chris Berardo and the Desperados have spent the last several years touring much of the country, playing hundreds of shows with the likes of the Doobie Brothers, Dickie Betts, the Great Southern, the Marshall Tucker Band, Reckless Kelly, American, David Allen Coe, and Little Feat, and many others, as well as countless appearances as headliners everywhere from top-notch listening rooms to beer-soaked barrooms. Chris, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Hi, Alexa. Thank you for having me. Thanks very much.
So tell us, how did you get started in the music industry?
Well, you know, I've kind of done it all my life. I was in high school bands when I was a kid, you know, so long ago. When I wasn't at football practice, I was running home to learn songs in my friend's basement. And then after I went to the University of Miami for a couple of years, and I'd always dabbled in it. And after that, you know, I'd lived down in Washington, D.C. for a year where a friend of mine had a band. So we were always kind of in and out of it. And then pretty early on in the process there in life, I just sort of lit out fortunately, living close to New York City here. You know, I was able to audition for bands, and I up and went with a couple friends at one point out to L.A. when we were just kids and auditioned for bands out there. And you know, it just sort of always been part of what I did. And really, since that time, I mean, not long after high school, it just became the thing that I kind of did with my life. And I kind of always knew I would do since I, bought a Beatles record and a Monkees record, back when. So I just kind of leaped in like that. Before I knew it, you know, some years down the line, I was starting my own bands and beginning to write music, and just kept doing it because I really have no other skill. It's kind of presented itself, and it's not a bad way to walk through life. So,
how did you pick who you wanted in your band? How did you say okay for the different parts? How did you come about that?
That was largely the county. A lot of work released. the guys in the band now. After I've had my own band since this band. I've been on that for, it's going back to 25 years now. But this particular band, Chris Berardo and the Desperados, we put out our first CD in 1997. So that's some time ago now. And there's been a lot of different members over the years. Because, when you're starting, especially in our level of the game, you find that a lot of guys can come and go in circumstances, and trying to find the right mix musically and as a bunch of humans travel around together, it's hard to do. And I would say in the last 3, 4 years, 5 years, I mean, the majority of the six of us now have been together 7 or 8 years, and, a couple of years for the very most recent guy who's come in. And it came from kind of trial and error and defining our sound and me defining, what I wanted to be and the right kind of players. But like I said, then really getting to the point where we could offer the better people something as our career started to get a little traction. And then finding out also that we kind of wanted to play with the kind of people we wanted to play with and not, humans are humans. So it finally became a matter of music and just finding like-minded, positive people to be around in your life that are go-getters and know how to laugh. So that's really what we've kind of gotten it down to, over the last 3, 4, 5 years. And they're just, killer players and guys that you like to spend some time with, which in any industry, I guess, is kind of the trick. Who do you spend your days with, I think?
Yes, and I saw you perform, your group perform a couple of months ago, and you can definitely tell the passion is there, the chemistry is there, the excitement. I mean, the audience was just up off their feet. You can't sit still with when you're up on stage. It's such high energy and excitement that it's very powerful. It's very kind of uplifting to watch you perform. You can tell, sometimes you see people perform, and you're like, wow, they're great, they're good. but you have that presence. When you get up on stage, you demand, you know, you kind of command that people have to listen to you just by, you know, being there. You just have a very strong presence and a very positive vibe around you, around the whole band when you're performing.
Thank you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. That's nice. It makes me laugh a little because my brother Mark Douglas, who's in the band, and I, we always, you know, whenever we'll see us on a video or something, and we think, my God, we're just a bunch of monkeys, because there is a lot of energy, and people always say that word, you know, high energy. But it's just a natural thing for us because it's so much fun. I mean, we're so, if you get to do something that brings you such joy, you know, and that's the 2 hours or 40 minutes or 3 hours, depending on the show, you know, of your day, because you get to do this thing that you spend the rest of your life, you know, working at and shooting at. So that time up there is just, man, nothing can be wrong. And we find it kind of easy, you know, the most natural thing to just want to give a lot of energy because it's just real fun. But I'm glad it translates. I'm real glad that you had a good time. And, you know, when we see better getting it back from us, then that's the best part of it. That's when it's really fun. So thank you.
Yes, and I've been following your career for a while now, and boy, you travel. You are in every state. You're in every place. So many different types of venues. How do you find all these venues or choose all these venues?
We're running. We're on the run. If you know, if you knew about our behavior, you know why we were moving so much. we gotta keep on our toes. You know, we started years ago. Well, it's a funny thing. We had that first CD in 1997, and people were just starting. You know, previous to that, I'd kind of been more in the mainstream music business, where you're always sort of, you know, just a minute or two away from the big record deal in those days. And I did all that and was real close and did a lot of, wrote with some great, you know, truly great Hall of Fame songwriters and worked with some of the greatest producers and managers ever in the business. And then that stuff sort of was, and the business was really changing back then, and I'd come back from L.A. and just started to sort of regroup and think about what to do. And that's really when people were kind of starting to, there was more of a grassroots movement starting to happen. And I kind of latched onto that idea and made my own record and, like I said, started to field a new group and with a different kind of idea towards how to approach the industry and to not approach the industry, just to play music that I cared about, see what happened. And in the course of just playing and seeing what happened and playing anywhere and everywhere, I sort of hooked up with my brother Mark, and we began to just play. I came back here to the New York, Connecticut area and started to just, the two of us playing in bars, which we did for years and had a lot of fun, just playing old songs that we loved. And when I made the record and started to put the band together, we're already in the habit, Mark and I, just getting in a van and going, you know, going out for some adventure, going where people would pay us and, you know, to go play songs and just something to do, just something to make money and to have some adventure. And we kept up that idea when the band started. Just we'd go anywhere under any circumstance that, you know, we could afford it. There was a tank of gas and they had some neon in the window and they wanted us. We'd go, and it was big gigs and small ones and little places and dangerous places. And we just sort of, the idea early on for me was let's go. You know, there's no more waiting around for the music business to find you. And we're going to go out and find them. And to whatever degree we could at the time, first just me and Mark, then a third guy, and all piled into a room. And then eventually we were able to get a fourth and a fifth and a sixth. And, you know, just that became the idea, like, let's make this music and bring it to people, you know, hand over fist, just right to them. And that's the delivery system that we kind of chose. And we're made for that. You know, we're cut out for it. I love an adventure, and we love to go out and meet folks, and we love these situations. And the music will bring you to these great places in the world and and to meet all these people you never would have. And that's part of the joy of that. You know, that's what the music gives you back when you do this. So we're still doing it. You know, the shows have gotten better over the years, I think, and hooked on to some tours with some, you know, great people and things like that. But essentially, we're just still out there in the van and the trailer coming to your town to see if we can, you know, see if we can all friend up.
What an amazing story. So what is the wildest, maybe craziest place or performance you've ever done?
I don't I don't know. Crazy is a relative term, but we did a couple. We did one long one and a couple other. We've done some David Allan Coe tours. And David Allan Coe is great, you know, a seminal country rock outlaw artist. Came along the same time as Willie Nelson and Waylon and Jerry Jeff Walker and people like that. And he's a great songwriter. And he's still out there playing, and his shows are very, very, very different. And, you know, we played everywhere from ballrooms and dance halls in Texas to beautiful theaters and House of Blues in South Carolina, places that were lovely, places that were dangerous. And his crowd is fervent and devoted and very Southern and sometimes really, really dangerous. And we always had a great time, and every show we did was fun, and we were pretty well received, but we also saw some of it. And it's not Mr. David Allan Coe's fault. It just seems to be the dynamic of that music, you know, that he's played through the 70s and 80s. And it's we saw some of the most violent, frightening, you know, crazed events that you could be part of. I mean, make Altamont look like a tea dance, some of these shows. So those were, you know, those deserve. I'll sit down and tell you some stories someday.
Yeah. So do you just keep on playing? Do you kind of acknowledge what's going on? I mean,
they're nice to us.
No,
no, you know.
Leave.
Well, when you go on first, you know, you got 40 minutes in those situations, and our goal was to not, you know, get one in the neck and just make it out of there. But we were lucky. I mean, almost every show, with a couple, you know, small exceptions, we were really well received. It was earlier, you know, we're on for 40 minutes earlier, and that might help. But because as the night goes on, everybody gets a little more agitated. But we got away pretty good. And I'll tell you, as a band, I still say it's not something we have done lately, but that tour and those shows, I think, did a lot for our band, because you really learn how to entertain, how to make it happen, how to win over people that might not be predisposed. You know, they had many bands, they told us, that, you know, were booked for 6 dates on a tour and never showed up after the first date, just went home. And we,
oh, wow.
You know, we were out there. We tell one thing about us, we show up and we will, you know, we'll give it a good try. And we were out there slugging it out. And I think it made us, you know, I always say it's like swinging two bats in the on-deck circle at a baseball game. You know, you do that, and then you go to play any other show in any other situation and tour with anybody else, and it's pretty easy because you really build up some muscles doing a thing like that. And we ended up, I think it made the band tighter and better and afraid of nothing, and that's, you know, and that's how you have to be. You're out there to sell yourself. And so it was a good experience, but we did see some things that we can't unsee. And,
yes.
You know, it's, but there
it is. It should be all part of your book one day.
What's that?
You should write a book one day. It could be part of your memoirs.
Yeah, that will be a full pull-out pop-up section in the middle of the book. With, but
so
yeah, we're glad we did them.
Oh, go ahead. How would you describe your music? What type of music? What genre? What do you think how would you describe it?
Finish dance music. No, it's I think that's long been the question, because like I said, when I sort of stopped years back being on the sort of a part of the more mainstream music business, the idea for me was to, I just couldn't care less anymore about labels. I'd kind of done that, like I said, gotten real close and made a couple concessions to what I really wanted to be playing and singing in my life. And because of that, I was determined, like, that just wasn't going to matter to me anymore. Because, you know, when I grew up, I'm old enough that there was AM radio here in New York. It was the best station in the world ever. And places like WABC radio played right next to each other. They would play a Neil Young song and then a song, you know, like a disco song, and then Deep Purple, and then the Beatles, and then the OJs and the Spinners. And because of that, I never saw categories. You know, I loved songs. I just really loved great songs, and that's what they gave you. And I was determined not to get too worked up about categories at all. But, you know, within the context of that, I realized how much I grew up loving all those Southern rock bands and like I said, Neil Young and the Eagles and James Taylor and a lot of the great singer-songwriters in the 70s meant a lot to me. And so because of that, I kind of went back and realized, you know, that's really, that's something you can, they don't have a category for now because country music wasn't like that, the radio wasn't like that anymore, but we got kind of lucky. I just made the first record, the kind of thing I wanted, that was just an American rock band with electric instruments and acoustic instruments and singing, hopefully, and songs, and, you know, an emphasis on harmonies and things. Like, I grew up on, let's say, the Doobie Brothers and that kind of thing, and a category kind of sprung up around that time, which was just a stroke of luck. They started to play what they were calling outlaw country and became known as Americana, you know, music, which is now, you know, is a full-on chart on Billboard, and there's now Grammy categories for it and everything. But there wasn't that. It was just me playing the, you know, the sort of American rock music of my youth and what I wanted to express at the time. And now they call it roots rock. And, you know, when I was a kid, you call it country rock, but that's a bad word. Now people like to country rock because they think of country music on the radio, which is so different than what we do now. It's just so different than country music was years ago, and we're not really a part of that. But, you know, it's rootsy American rock music, and they, like I said, it kind of falls under the big tent that's Americana music, which then takes in songwriters and takes in, you know, American, just all the American roots stuff from the old-timey music to that. So, I think that's kind of, you know, where we fall, and the people that we've toured with and opened for and share bills with are kind of that stuff that's a little outside for Nashville, but still has a an American country-ish element to it. So I think it's there, and I think people want it. I think definitely people who grew up in the 70, you know, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s kind of remember that's the music that they were weaned on and weren't able to find for a long time. So it's becoming a more a larger and more demand kind of thing in terms of venues and radio and all of that stuff. So yeah, I think that's where we fall in.
Yeah, and I definitely agree, because I know the few shows that I have gone to of yours, it's a packed venue. It definitely is a full crowd. It's a packed venue. People are really excited and they're for the music. So I think it's really that type of music, really kind of a whole mix of different things. Now, you write some of your own music. How is that for you, writing your music, writing your songs?
Yeah, I've written everything on all of the albums we've done so far.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And, you know, we actually did record on the last album a reworking of a song by a band called Wilco, who are kind of one of the forebears of this sort of alternative country, roots rock kind of movement. But everything else has been songs of mine here in the band. And we also do live, you know, the other guys are all, there's a couple singer-songwriters in the band, Bill Kelly and my brother Mark Douglas. They make their own records, which are beautiful and very successful. But and we play some of them with the band. But the ones we've recorded so far, the band have all been mine. And, you know, it's, like I said, it's just something I've always done. I've been playing, it's some sort of band that I've been writing songs for since back in the old days in the early 80s when I was tripping around New York City and later out in L.A. And I actually was, in those days, I'd fallen in through a manager and some producers. I was working with a guy named Bob Crew, who is the producer and songwriter for all the Four Seasons hits. And if anybody's seen the Jersey Boys and the movie recently, Bob Crew was featured in that pretty prominently. He was a guy who became one of my mentors and one of my favorite people in the world. I loved him. We just lost him very recently. And, you know, to write with him early on in my career, he's in the Hall of Fame. He sold something like 140 million records of his songs. And, that was a big influence on me early on, how to really be take songwriting seriously and how to approach it and make it a, you know, real part of your life and expression of everything that you do with your music. So for me, it feels great to be able to have these, you know, an outlet for these songs. And it, to me, it makes the band more personal. You know, I've learned over the years to write for the set. We were talking before about finding the guys you want to play with and finally come to the right lineup, and that, a lot of that is finding the sounds you want to project and writing material for that. You know, I learned then eventually what our band sounded like and started trying to find out how I could write more for that particular group and sound. And to be able to do that and get, you know, have a place for my songs, it's a beautiful thing. And I have a lot of crap to say, so it's a great way for me to say it all. And songwriting is a beautiful way to, you know, you don't want to be a disgruntled postman or something. So it's a wonderful outlet.
It's a great way to express yourself.
What's that?
It's definitely a great way to express yourself and get everything out there, that makes sure everyone can listen.
Yeah, it sure is. It's great. It's fun. It's something I've always loved. And like I said, having a few songwriters in the band, besides the stuff we do with Chris Berardo and the Desperados, but we just recently went, the band will sometimes go out like just as a trio for smaller acoustic kind of listening type shows, which I love doing. And we just did a run of that. We just got back 2 days ago from doing that in Texas. And when we do that lately, me and Mark and Bill will all play our own songs, which I love doing that, just being around these guys who are just, you know, fine songwriters. Mark's won many awards in the, you know, folk community for songwriting, some big ones. And Bill's very accomplished songs and films and such. So, you know, just being around guys that know songwriting and prize it. And, you know, we all love a lot of the same songwriters. Some are well-known, some are not. So that's it's a real healthy, great, soulful thing to live your life around. And that's a real big part of this for me.
When writing a song, I mean, is there a certain process? Can some songs come in one day? Do some take 2 years? I mean, what would you say your process is?
Well, that's, both things have happened. You know, I have stuff on our records that I literally wrote in a flash that day. I mean, I think most songwriters probably say this. Some will come like that, and often they're the best ones that are just, bam, there it is. And that's the gift. And then I have some, we're recording, we just started, while we were in Texas this past week, we just started, kind of restarted recording our next record. We've had a couple false starts and just timing things and different approaches, but some of the ones we just started recording last week, I've had, the band's been playing for a year and a half. You know, they've been, and changing. You know, I wrote them and then they change because they're living, breathing things, and the arrangements and feels and things according to how we play them and what we like and response from people and things will change them all. So some of these are changing a year and a half into their lives, these songs. And some of them that I may have on this record I've had sitting around, you know, for a couple of years, 2-3 years, I think one of them that we're considering. So sometimes you're not sure something's done. I have things that have been, you know, half finished for years. I think most people who write are like that. And some of them just, bam, there they are. And, you know, you'll think you have a group of songs for a record, and then you'll look up and you just wrote 3 more in the meantime. And so some of them will get bumped. We recorded one for our last record down in, which we did down in Charlotte. And I just found an old recording of the other day, remembered that we bumped it from the record, and it's a good song. And I thought, well, geez, maybe we should have it on this one. So they come in some drips and drabs, and you never know if they're going to be fast or a long process, and you never know they're done until they're done, until they're on the record shrink-wrapped. You know, like I said, they're kind of breathing and changing all the time. So.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel vulnerable or exposed when you're up there? Because some of these songs are your personal work. Do you ever feel sometimes very vulnerable being up there singing your work?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I don't know, depends on the kind of music, but, you know, we're a rock band, but they are, I like to think they're, you know, songwritery songs, that they have a confessional element, which you don't sometimes see in rock bands, which I hope maybe that's the small, if we have some small point of difference, I think it's things like that. And, absolutely, that can happen. There are some I didn't want to play at first, you know, because, you know, you felt a little, especially in the earlier days of this band, I felt like, boy, that's giving up a lot, and that's not rock, you know, let people in like that. But I feel like that less now, but definitely there's that element when you feel like, geez, you've a lot of strangers are listening. But that's also, mostly that's the great part of it, I think, is just be able to give up something, throw it out there. It's yours, it's personal, it's, and that's the soulful part of the experience. If people receive it, if they throw something at you or hate you or rush the stage with torches, that's fine. If they, you know, if they receive it and it's great and it's something where, you know, somebody says, you know, that's, I know what that means, or that's a little like me. I know that's what I love when I go to see music. That's what I've always loved, is that sense of, like, you know what, even if it's not a lyric, even if it's a chord progression or a solo or a harmony, and you just feel like, I that's an emotion that's in my palate somewhere, and like, I know that. And that's the point of doing it. That's the point, playing music in the world, I think, is, you know, it's the tree in the forest. It has to hit somebody's ears and be received. And so I think the more it's personal and the more you can let yourself go, which kind of comes with doing it more and more, I think, so then the more beautiful it is when the dice roll out, right, and it's and it works. So to answer your question, yeah, it is. Sometimes you do feel that way, but that's the job of the songwriter, and mostly it feels great, because I've never sung a song and not looked out there, you know, and not thought, like, somebody's receiving it, and so then nothing else matters. You know, that's way better than the small problem of, you know, feeling vulnerable. But that's a very good question, though.
Thank you. Well, I know with performing and everything and being on stage, I mean, you have to you kind of have to get a tough skin. I mean, there has to be a certain, you know, learning of your sense of self and self-confidence. How was your journey to that? How did you get to a certain part? I mean, was there one point where you said, wow, this is really hard? Or was there one certain event that said, okay, I believe in myself, this is what I'm going to do?
Nah. I was always... If you ask my mom, she says confidence was never a big problem. I've always been under the delusion or otherwise that I've got something to say, which I think, you know, kind of is, some people are that way, and if you are, that really helps. My mom, for instance, was a great singer, still is. Sang that, like, at the lounge at the Copa back in the 50s, and was, you know, just super blessed, talented, still can just belt it out. She's great. But she always tells us a story of playing at a club in New York many years ago, and she saw her friends sitting out at a table, and she just felt, you know, she wanted to sit out at the table with them. Like, she felt like, as she said, the hired help, and kind of, like you said before, a little vulnerable and everyone looking at her. She didn't like any of those parts of it. And my brother and I, for instance, we love all of the parts of it. Like, we love to be up there, and we, you know, I've always felt bad at a show when I was younger, especially before I was able to do it myself. I felt bad watching, like I was facing the wrong way. That hurt my stomach a little. I used to feel like I think I should definitely be up there. I'm pretty sure. So that was never a problem. But I will tell you that, you know, when you're starting and before you have the goods, and who knows if we have them now, but, you know, when you're starting out, you definitely have more to learn, and you haven't got your skills refined yet. And getting up there, knowing there's some holes in your game, definitely, I think anybody who does it will tell you that can be nerve-wracking. And there's never time, I don't think, my mom said, aren't you guys ever nervous? I said, well, yeah, if you're not nervous, you're not paying attention. You should be nervous for anything, for the littlest gig in the world, you know, in some old bar. It's me and my brother Mark. You get a little nervous because, like you said, you're facing everybody and, you know, hey, look at me. So if you're taking up their time. So there's a little pressure. But I think as you go on and you have a point of view and you have something to say and you start to feel more like you know the reason you're there and maybe you've got some creds behind you, that certainly makes it easier. And I've gotten to the point in my life now where I just feel like, no, I'm quite sure, right or wrong, I feel like I'm quite sure I have something to tell you all. So you get a lot more confident, because it's like anything else, it's the doing it and then hopefully getting better. I think you get better at this. Every guitar player and drummer will tell you, and I sure feel that way as a singer and a songwriter, but I'm better today than I was last week, you know, hopefully, just from the experiences, and you learn something every time. But you know, sometimes, yeah, sure, you face down a David Allan Coe crowd, you got to get your confidence up, absolutely, some days more than others.
Mm-hmm. And I think those nerves, any type of performance nerves, you always, you know, get those jitters. I get jitters right before I do my radio show. I get all, you know, you get all nervous and you're like, wow, but I think that's what kind of makes the performance. That's what, you love what you do, but you're like, oh God, I get so nervous. Why am I doing this? But then once you're doing it, it's just, you're doing it. It's your passion. It just comes out.
Yeah, you're right. That we were just talking in the van on the road recently with Bill Kelly, our talented mandolin guitar player, and we all had a big laugh because he was saying, like, boy, when I was a kid especially, and still to this day, sometimes you get to the venue and you think, like, why did I do this? How did I get myself into this? Like, you know, why did I purposefully cause myself to undergo this kind of pressure? And, you know, we laugh because we all know, well, we know why we do it, because the minute you start doing it, it's the greatest thing ever, and then you go do it the next day. But there is that moment before of like, boy, I could have avoided this.
Yes. So. It's like, why am I doing, you know, it's really being vulnerable, exposing yourself, and putting yourself out there.
Yeah,
what advice would you give?
It's the best job in the world. It's great. And I've always felt like people who complain about this particular job in the world are just should be quiet, because it's a really, you know, all told, every job we're working for a living, it's hard. I know. I mean, I've heard and I've seen it, you know, and this is a, you know, if you get to do a thing that matters to you, that's you've been touched by the hand. And so, you know, once you're up there, it could be more fun to especially to play with your friends and guys you know, care about and respect, and to go up there and be able to make some joyous noise. That's pretty good. So it's hard, you know, it's a pretty small hardship, and it's a good gig. What I do for nerves, Les, is right before we go on, I take off my cape, I hand it to my brother Mark, and I take off most of my jewels, and we recite a Keats poem. I take one of my blue pills, and then off we go. That usually helps me. That's not a real thing, Collect. I just made that part up.
I said, wow, wait a second. What is this? And obviously you have a great sense of humor. You're very witty.
Well, thank you. That's what people sometimes say when they hear me sing.
You're very good. What advice would you give for new people starting in the business, wanting to be in the music industry?
I don't know. I feel like the music industry now is, I would say, don't try to be in the music industry. Try to play music. That's what I've told a few people who've been deranged enough to ask me for advice. I feel like, you know, just go play music. I've seen my brother, especially when he's playing at folk festivals and the like, I've seen him ask this question, and I've seen him take a child with his guitar aside and say, first, go around and get your butt kicked around the bars for 15 years. And that's really, no one wants to hear that, because that's not how the world works these days, really. But that is the thing. Like, go play music because you want to play music, because you have to play music, because you'll be out of your brain with anxiety and madness if you don't play music. And do that, and know why you do it, and why you want to, and why you must. And then the industry part, well, you know, you could find that, it'll find you, you'll find your niche, it'll seek its own level. But if, you know, I fear that too many people now, because of the way the world is, and because everybody in the world can make a record on their computer, and, you know, it just doesn't, there's access doesn't always make for quality or for the right reasons. And so because of that, I think too many people are worried about, like, what will I, before they have the music, they want to know, well, you know, where will I put it, and who will see it, and, you know, should I put it on YouTube, should I release it? Just, you know, go play for people in real life, in a room, and, you know, maybe get pushed around a little, and maybe be great, and figure out the difference. That's really, really what I would say to people, because the rest, you know, you'll figure that out, and it'll figure you out, too. So that would be my advice.
Mm-hmm. Now, looking over some of your songs, I see one of your songs, Old Man's Eyes. Tell me about that one.
Well, that was our first record that we made, like I said, in 1997, which was a real different kind of record for it. We were just, you know, figuring it out. We made part of that album, Friends, Houses, and Bedrooms, and Live It Up, at a little insane bar that me and Mark played for years in Largemont, New York. And, so it was primitive when we were starting out. But at the time, the fellas who I was playing with, a bunch of guys in the band, two of the guys had a situation going on, a health thing with their dads at the same time. And I started to write this song just sort of with that in mind, and then quickly realized during the writing of it that it was kind of, you know, of course, about my father. You know, you imprint your own experience on things. And it, I wrote about my dad, who's a Marine and a really amazing, interesting guy, with pretty positive, he's a spy most of his life. no one really knows what he ever did. You know, and it just came at a time in my life. To tell you the truth, you know, because of his background and mine being so different, it wasn't always a walk in the park, me wanting to do this for a living. And when he saw me taking off for the territories, you know, out to L.A. and New York and doing this for real, I don't think they loved it, you know. And, of course, there was, like, all the usual bumping of heads. And I think that's the greatest thing ever happened to me. You know, to go back to your earlier question, I would tell people, you know, who are starting to, like, you know, hey, go through some rough waters, you know, maybe, you know, see if your parents hate it and then see how much you care about it. Because the thing I found is I had to fight for it, you know, I had to decide, do I really want to do this and burn a lot of bridges and upset, you know, a family that cared about me. But, and at this particular time, also the only time it ever happened in my life, my dad and I were having a 2-year period of rough waters. We were just having about a couple events, as life can be, that were just, we were seeing things different, and we really kind of were at odds. And, you know, as I said, I started writing it, saw that it was about him, and was able to, you know, put some thoughts into a place and centralize them. And we recorded, started playing, and I'll say that I think it's probably really helped, maybe saved our relationship. I know it helped me to, you know, be able to have a place to express that to him, how important he is. And, you know, ever since that, I feel like it helped. So, you know, if you're having problems with your folks, kids, just write him a song. They seem like that, because now my dad couldn't be more happy to be the guy in the song. You know, he tells anybody who will listen, and I love it. And so that's, you know, came from that, and it's kind of like I hope a good song is. It's about everybody's situation. It might apply to a lot of people, I bet. And the nicest thing ever is I've heard so many people, you know, with that song in particular, you know, say that's, you know, that meant a lot to me, and meant a lot to me and my dad. I played it for him, or, you know, my dad's gone and it reminded me, and, you know, stuff like that is why you do it, and why you just hope that you'll touch on some emotions that are universal. And in my case, you know, it's real special to me, because, you know, our dad is a force, and a good force, and it was great to be able to give him a little tip of the hat there with that song. Yeah. So we still play it.
Sounds very rewarding.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. Sounds like a very rewarding song, a very,
yeah,
you know, kind of an outlet and rewarding for everybody involved.
Yes, absolutely. That one's special, and came kind of quick, like we were talking about before. We kind of wrote it in a quick burst, and we still do play it. We haven't played it in a little while. I'm glad you reminded, because maybe I'm going to bring it back out these next few shows.
Yes. And then there's another song. It was your called September Prayer. How did that come about?
Well, you know, it was that day. That terrible day that everybody went through, you know, 2001. And, you know, after that, I mean, everybody who lives where I grew up, you know, and, you know, my brother and I grew up in Westchester County and went to high school in Nerschelle. And, you know, the town industry, you know, it's like the mill. The town industry really was the financial business, you know. So because of that, just so many people that we all knew, you know, were connected somehow to that tragedy, and, you know, there's so much bad news, and it was a rough, of course, you know, just the worst day for everybody. And I'd heard so many songs about that, and some beautiful ones. My brother Mark wrote a beautiful one about the iron workers down there, the steel workers who going through the wreckage there, which you should look up his song. It was beautiful. And a little bit after the fact when when we weren't hearing so much about it, the song just kind of came to me about that day. I mean, it's kind of a selfish song in my mind. It was just about someone that I knew, and cared so much about, a specific person that was there right at the center of the event and what I was thinking that day. And you know what humans do sometimes, you can't help it, you make deals, and I was making some deals that day with whoever was in charge up there, I hope everybody's all right, but if you could get this one person home for me, that would be, it was just a little more of a realistic, personal prism sort of look at that day, which was so broad and so big and touched so many people's lives. So that was just a little kind of slice of just one thing that I was thinking, just because we all also had specific people down there that we were rooting for, And, there's a little guilt to that. You didn't want anything to happen to anybody, but you still want yours to come home. So we never played that song. We recorded it down in Charlotte that day, sang it the one time, and I've never sang it again. We've never played it again. But I'm glad it's there, and it's, it's just another take on that tough day.
If people want to follow your music, want to find out, what's going on, where can they find you? Where can they find your music?
We're on the Sullivan Show about twice a year. There's no Ed Sullivan Show anymore.
I realized that.
But if there was, that little Topo Gigio, I'd really like to give him a talking to. He seems a little uppity. What is he, an agitator? But I think the best way to find us and keep up with us is folks love the Facebook. Kids love the Facebook. And the band Desperado and the Desperados Facebook page and my own, to a great degree, we make sure to try to keep everything up there along with selfies and gossip about kids in our school. And also, we have a pretty new website this past year at chrisberardo.com or desperado.com, which is hard to spell, D-E-S-B-E-R-A-R-D-O, toughest name in show business. But desperado.com is this great new site that the folks who look after us at 360 is the name of the company, and this just brilliant guy named James Weber out in Austin, Texas, developed this site for us. It's unusual and different and a really cool website, and everything's there. And we're pretty much, hands-on with people, and, if you sign up on that email list there, we will send things to you. We'll come to the house if we need to. And it's a little grassroots, but everything you probably want to find, and mostly where we're going to be, you can find there. And we hope you will. And please come out and see us, and buy a hat, and shake a hand, and have a beer with us, because we'd love to meet you.
And you have some great upcoming shows, live shows coming up. I think you said mentioned something about the Turning Point at Piermont.
Yeah, actually, we're. We are around here for a while. I think when you probably hear this, we'll have just maybe played in New York City. And then the Turning Point, well, I'll tell you before that, we're going to play it in Rye, New York, which is the town that Mark and I grew up in. And we do it three or four times a year. It's the smallest place we play in, and one of the definitely most fun. It's just a very small, wooden, cool bar called the Rye Roadhouse. And we go in there. We started doing acoustically, just me and the guys all sitting in a circle with, instead of electric instruments, with banjos and mandolins and fiddle. And it's kind of grown back to where it's more of an old regular electric acoustic band show. But we sit and we play, a lot of the songs, and we'll do a lot of weird old things by other people. And it's a real fun, intimate thing that we get a kick out of. And we see a lot of our hometown friends. And, that's the town we were raised and beaten by nuns in, so it means a lot to us to go back there and
that was my first
and,
show I saw you at the Roadhouse. That's the show that hooked
right?
me. Met a couple of years ago, I saw you there, and I was like, wow, it was amazing. Very intimate setting, but it's just very lively.
Yeah, we're lively guys, and we drink a lot of whiskey, so that it's perfect in there. It's like a rubber room. You can't get hurt too bad in there. So that's real fun. And then We will then be on December 5th, which is a Friday night, maybe it's Saturday, but December 5th, a place we've been going, well, we haven't been in a long time, but we've played, you know, several times over the years, the Turning Point in Pyramont, New York, which is really one of the, I hope not one of the last, one of the great listening rooms in America. It's been there, I would have to check, but I think it's been there 25, 30 years, maybe more. And it's small and intimate also, but, I mean, I'm really the greatest songwriters and bands in the country have come through there routinely. I've gone to shows there for many years. And it really focuses on the song and listening, and it's very pristine and just a beautiful place to see music. So we're always proud to be able to drop in there. And it's a little different show for us, too. It's we kind of play it half electric, half acoustic, and it's something where we'll go back and play a lot of the older songs. It's just a real kind of evening with type thing, which allows us to stretch out. And on that show, on December 5th there in Pyramont, our great buddy and good friend and really one of the great guys around Westchester County area for many years, Chris Brown, is going to be opening that show. And Chris Brown is a real good singer-songwriter, has a bunch of great records. He's also in the Bookends, which is like the seminal fun party band around here since the late 70s around Westchester County. And Chris is great, and we'll be playing a set of his songs opening for us, and hopefully join us later. So it's going to be a real special night there on December 5th, I think, at the Turning Point in Pyramont.
Wow. How do people get tickets for that?
Well, I'll tell you what. You can queue up at the out there at the venue, but don't do that because that's silly. You can get them. We're sending people on our email list. We'll get a link to it in the next day or two. You can go on the Turning Point website, which I think is turningpoint.com, but just search the Turning Point in Pyramont, New York, and there is a ticket link right there. And it is smart because, like I said, it's pretty intimate. It is smart to get tickets for that one ahead of time. And you can there'll be a link on desperado.com as well, but definitely on that Turning Point site. And I don't know if it might be a little more expensive, but definitely the day of, they sell tickets right there at the door. You want to call ahead if you want to get a table. It's like table seating, which is really nice. So if you're coming with a few folks, you just probably want to call ahead and so you don't have to, you know, sit with weirdos or strangers. yeah, there's a couple ways to do it, and I hope people do. Cause that's, like I said, I've been to a lot of shows there myself, and it's a real nice place to go see some music and have an experience. So please do. We hope you're coming.
Yes, I'm definitely going to try and come. I also know a lot of your shows sometimes you do for special things, like you did a concert for Sandy Hook at the Ridgefield Playhouse. You've done some other things. How is that for you? How do you find different places to do that for?
That was a privilege. That was great. You know, everything that happened up at Sandy Hook was so rough. And, you know, I live up here in the Silver Mine, Connecticut, which is the Norwalk area. And the day that horrible thing happened, Mark and I were at our great, great, great friend, our former band member and producer of some of our records, Professor Dick Neal. We were at his house recording right up near there. And, I mean, he was picking up the phone and getting bad news about friends. So that day just, of course, crushed everybody. But you know, we were kind of right in the thick of it. And the Ridgefield Playhouse is a beautiful theater that we've played many times. You know, usually with friends of ours or people come through town like Dickie Betts or Marshall Tucker Band. We were there recently with America. It's a great place to see music. And they do a thing for that community with the kind of music they bring in that's above and beyond. It's something that people should support. And a woman named Allison Stockel, who kind of runs things up there, just leapt into action when that happened and put together In that case, it was just a matter of a couple of weeks. She put together this bill with Johnny Winter, one of his last really great shows, Johnny Winter. And one night, there were two nights, there was Paul Simon and Edie Brickell. I forget, everybody was on it, just really top talent. And we were really thrilled to be asked to do that with them all there. And it just really focused the community, gave a lot of money back for some things that they really needed some help for, some services and help for kids. So I had a lot of just counseling kind of things for kids. And so that felt great. You know, my band is kind of spread out, and some guys live in New York City. One One guy's in Rhode Island. One guy's almost near the Pennsylvania border. We were going to play three songs, like all the bands were doing that day. And when I asked my guys, geez, it's a long way to come, and, you know, we're just doing this for free to help out. And I'm proud to say that every guy in my band left the phone swinging on the cord and was there. You know, they didn't even blink. And, of course, just, you know, to be asked was great. And to me, it felt like everyone was so frustrated when an event like that happens and something goes so wrong, and it's so hard to fathom something like that and to figure it out in your mind. And you feel so frustrated, of course, like everyone. So lucky us, because of being asked, we were the lucky ones. We got to go and do something and focus on something, and it just felt so great to be able to make any sense of it, but to try to do something positive out of it. So that was really a gift to us, to just be able to go up there and be around those kind of musicians. Bernie Williams from the Yankees, who's a great guitar player, you know, all these great people, and to be able to just pitch in with our little two cents there and give something, just felt wonderful. And, you know, that's what people in a community that are the music people, you know, some communities have more of that than others, but when you have somebody spearheading music and the arts where you live, you're lucky, because it can just really rally people and, you know, heal them up and save a few souls. And that's, yeah, you know, I think that's what that can do to people in need. It's best and quickest and most visceral way, I think, to do it. So that, yeah, that was a particularly good one. And when we can ever do things like that, of course, we'd sure love to. And yeah, at the Cellar Bar in Largemont, New York, where I mentioned before, where the fire limit is 38, and my brother and I have played there for many years, two of us in the corner, and these guys do benefits every time something go wrong. When it was 9/11, they raised, I think it was $30,000, and I mean, they're amazing because they're good, real people down there. And when someone they know is hurt or down, they've done it. Me and Mark's played it over the years a million times. The owner, Dennis Gallagher, a strange and wise man, and he'd always told us over the years that it's great that you guys are playing these benefits because, you know, one day we'll be doing one for you too. So we always keep that in mind too. So, you know,
I see, that's one of the reasons, other than being extremely talented, your group really gives back to the community and really pays it forward. And that was another reason why I had you on my show, because of your spirit, your energy, your positive vibes, but also being able to, that you do take time to come back to where you started and give back to your community and really be genuine and passionate about it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate saying that. And, you know, a lot of people do a lot more, and a lot of people are in a position to do a lot more. We're, you know, for whatever degree we can help, you know, at our level of things in the world, that's we sure like to, because, like I said, it's a privilege to play music. You know, it's a struggle sometimes, but it's a privilege to struggle at something that you love. So, you know, if you happen to do a thing that, you know, that's our currency. You know, we can't donate $1 million, but we can go play these songs, and that's the thing we have to give. So it would be crazy not to. You know, we're lucky to have it, and it can help sometimes. And the more people do that stuff, you know, it's helped me, you know, so many times in my life. I don't know how many times someone's show or a record, or just seeing, you know, it could be some mega star. You see Bruce Springsteen taking his time to play something, and, you know, I find it moving. I think it reminds you that there's good in all of this. You know, that's the best part of the species there at work. So that mm-hmm. helps. And as I said, finding guys that you work with that are like that and are like-minded, you know, you got to spend your time in the world with certain people. So, it's, you know, people who get that and are soulful people makes you feel good about, you know, about what you can do, because we all got to pitch in some, right? It's like Dennis Gallagher said, one day it'll be for us.
You always got to give back. Now, before we go, I definitely wanted to play at the end one of your songs. I picked the song The One. What is it about?
El Uno. It is, that one was just really about, well, again, I hope songs have a larger meaning and mean different things to different people. You know, I try to write them so it isn't too specific, but for me, it was about, you know, late at night being after a gig long, long time ago, you know, somewhere at 5 a.m. at a diner, and calling somebody else that you know is new in your life, and and saying, you know, having that conversation, wanting to call somebody at 5 in the morning from the diner after a gig, and you're thinking, you know, there's something special here. This could be, is this, why am I doing this? What is, look at this. And, you know, and I'm thinking, is this, oh, you never know what left turn or right turn you're going to take and who's going to pop up and become important in your life. And so I hope that people who hear it and it means something to them, you know, that it's just that thing in general where you're always looking and you never know. And it could be a romantic thing or it could be something else, but it's, you know, it's just the thing. It's just the person. It's just the situation. You know, you got to be ready when it comes and you're ready to receive, you know. So, you know, you're walking around every day trying to be a little better so that when the opportunities present itself in life, whatever they are, that you're ready to saddle up. So I think it's kind of about that. It's about keeping your eyes open.
Thank you. And Chris, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate you doing a really good thing here, and I appreciate you coming to the shows. And please keep doing that, and keep doing what you're doing here. It's great, and thank you for having me.
Thank you. All right, everyone, good night and God bless. And as we go out, here is The One.